You're listening to Work Tape, episode 135.
Welcome to this edition of the Work Tape podcast. It's your boy, Money Mitchell, Isaac Rubin Grover.
What's up, guys?
And we're going to continue on this episode with some more news and more information regarding Beyoncé's Texas Hold'em single. Not only has it reached number one on the country charts, it has now also reached number one on the Billboard Hot 100, to the surprise of basically almost no one. I mean, in a way, Beyoncé is one of those artists where, I mean, kind of like the Verizon commercial that she was in, she could put out a jazz album and it would be number one.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just the core fan base is like so strong. And I mean, in a way, her and Taylor Swift both have kind of these somewhat cult-like fan bases where you say anything that is not like 100% positive on either one of them and you are going to get flamed on the internet. You are going to get barbecued, basically.
Nice tie-in.
You really are, because the Beehive is serious and the Swifties are the same way in terms of if anything that is not, like I said, you know, completely in praise of either one of them, you're going to get, it's going to come back to you basically. And that's a very interesting thing, because we'll talk a little bit about
their cults.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit about this whole thing, and Taylor actually does play into this in a little bit. But once again, it has kind of surpassed even a lot of people's expectations. I remember when we were covering this a few weeks ago, that there was a lot of pushback from country radio stations who were actually not even playing the song, despite the fact that they were getting requests to play it. There was a lot of country radio stations who simply refused to play it because they felt like it wasn't country enough. And I think I remember talking about how that was very similar to the Lil Nas X situation with Old Town Road when it came out. And very much like Old Town Road, it has now hit number one. How long will it stay number one is really up for time to decide. But it does kind of seem like it's a bit of history repeating itself in that respect.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, of course, a lot of people were quick to pull the race card on the country music stations not playing it. And to a certain extent, I kind of agree with that, just because they're very quick to play, you know, Morgan Wallen, who to me is almost a hip hop artist with a country aesthetic at this point. They're very quick to play his music, but as soon as Beyonce comes out, then they have to start questioning it. So it's an interesting dynamic, but it's risen to the charts. And like I said, it's not a bad song. It's a fun song.
I think that this track is a lot more to the roots of country. And I find it fascinating that for the last 10, 15 years, we've entertained country in a more hip hop sense.
Mm.
This one did have the 4-4 backbeat.
Mm.
And again, it's the guitar playing. The guitar playing is undoubtedly, you know, the country blues, but yeah, it just did not feel like a Lil Nas X or Morgan Wallen type country sound. It was more like to its roots. And you can obviously hear, you know, the classic pop Beyonce, you know, it didn't feel like R&B, you know, it didn't feel like that Beyonce, but it definitely felt like Beyonce. And I thought it was kind of cool. You know, I'm not really crazy about the track, but I do think that it was it's pretty cool and I liked it. I like that it's a lot more country than what has been country for the last 10 years. And oh, yeah. My take is that it's actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's really even as bad. I know we kind of, you know, that parallel with the Applebee's track. It's there. I hear it, but I think it's just weirdly better than a lot of stuff today in the country spectrum.
Yeah. There was definitely some folks coming out who are saying the same thing. I think even Anthony Fantano said that he felt like this Beyoncé track is a lot more country than a majority of country artists over the last 5 years, for sure.
Bro, totally agree with that.
For sure. And he was kind of one of the early people to actually kind of defend the track, because I think this was when there was a lot of pushback from it when it like initially came out. And he was one of the first people to kind of like defend the track and say, actually, no, like this is pretty authentic sounding. He did mention, I believe, as well, Beyoncé's Texas roots, which that definitely gives it a certain amount of authenticity for sure, that she is from Texas. She's from Houston, which, of course, Houston is a very like musically diverse city. And Texas in general, like even in Austin and whatnot, has a lot of music. Like actually Austin, I believe, is the live music capital of the world.
Yeah, it is. And then San Antonio is like all this indie stuff. I mean, Texas has a really vibrant music scene in all the different cities.
Yes. And kind of like Nashville, there's like a lot of places where musicians can be playing like every single night. And that's why a lot of musicians have moved out to areas of Texas and Nashville and even, you know, Memphis, Tennessee and whatnot, because you can play like every night. But that's besides the point. Houston, like in particular, has, you know, like I said, a melting pot of sounds, because of course you're going to have the country influence throughout the entire state. I mean, you know, with it being Texas, it's going to be country throughout the entire state. But then there's also stuff like, you know, Chopped and Screwed came from Texas, you know, in Houston, which is that slowed down stuff. Don't call it slowed and reverbed. Like that's it's Chopped and Screwed. That's what came first. Chopped and Reverbed was kind of like the whitewash version of it. And that's like, it's basically the same thing. But just to reiterate, like I said, you know, with her coming from Texas and, you know, very much being around that country culture, even if her family wasn't necessarily like, you know, ranchers or, you know, whatnot, the fact that she probably grew up around that culture and probably did take in, you know, a bit of that like aesthetic, it does sell it a lot more.
With her being from there, and this is something that Candace Owens has caught heat for commenting on, basically making the point that Beyoncé is more country than even Taylor Swift.
Mm.
And, you know, Taylor Swift being from PA, you know, she's from the Atlantic side of the US. Nothing wrong with that. It's just when you really compare the two, it's a profound statement, because I don't really believe that you can't do a sound just because you're not from a certain culture. But I definitely do believe that there's a statement or a case to be made when someone says, okay, well, you know, Beyoncé is from Texas and then Taylor's from PA and Taylor puts on a fake accent, whereas Beyoncé is able to, like, that twang has always been a part of her, is what Candace was basically saying. And I had to agree with that, because it's just, it's one of those, like, the reason why it's so weird is just like the fact that people are criticizing Beyoncé, or, you know, people don't want to play her, I think is just very, like, I don't really care about the color part. Like, that's irrelevant to me. It could play into it, but I think that's irrelevant. I think it's more insulting the fact that she's from Texas and she's from that area. You know, she grew up around it. And like you said, she doesn't have to be from a ranch hand type family, right? But the fact that she's from that area, and then for her to do the sound, and then that there are people who push back at it, I think it's really insulting when she has to compete with people who probably didn't grow up nearly as close to that culture that she did. Because I don't know Taylor Swift's life. I thought when she did the country, even though I wasn't a fan of it, and that was just because I didn't care for that sound when I was younger, but I actually did like Taylor Swift's country, and I actually preferred Taylor Swift's country versus her 1989 and Red. Now, Red was great, but I'm just saying I preferred that iteration. I was so used to her doing the country pop that I was like, no, she should have stayed there. So I wasn't really the fan of a big fan of 2010s Swift.
Mm-hmm.
But now here we are, where I kind of, first off, I didn't know for a long time that Beyoncé was from Texas. I learned that pretty recently. I didn't know where Swift was from. I would have expected at least Tennessee, like Paramore, but I guess, you know, she was from Pennsylvania and that's fine. But yeah, I don't think it's that big of a deal for Beyonce to do that. Like, I don't feel like she's appropriating or anything, you know, especially considering her background. So I find it very odd that she's gotten so much backlash. She, you know, she's always done the R&B like nobody else, right? Like, I listened to the track, it sounded convincing, and it didn't put anything on my radar. I was like, this is pretty good, you know, like, it's not something I'd listen to for a multitude of reasons, but stylistically, I was like, this is pretty good. So,
yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I do believe that I'm in the camp as well of Taylor being better on the country side of things.
I thought it was just me.
No, it's not.
No, I still feel this way, you know? Like, to this day, I still feel country stuff is better.
No, it's not at all. I believe that Taylor made her best music when she has a country, or at the very least, like an acoustic kind of folk influence.
She nails it.
Because, of course, with the Folklore and Evermore sound, those weren't exactly country albums, but they had more of like a folk acoustic basis. And I think when she leans into that, as opposed to the pop stylings that she's done on, you know, Midnight's Red, 89, Reputation. I mean, she's been a pop artist for like the last 10 years, basically.
I don't think she does the pop as well as Bey. And I'm not a Bey fan. I'm just saying, I don't even think she does it as well as Beyonce does. And this is not a colorist thing for me to say. I
agree with that too. I also agree with that. I think that the issue that I have with Taylor's pop productions, as successful as they've been, like, you know, a lot of people would say that 1989 is kind of like a synth pop classic, which
it is,
because those songs have held up pretty well and whatnot. But the main issue I have with a lot of the pop productions as of recent is that I think it doesn't highlight and it doesn't showcase Taylor's lyrics as well as it could.
Good point.
And I think that's the thing with her doing more acoustic and country based or folk based stuff, is that the lyrics can really shine through. And then people are like, oh, she actually is a good songwriter.
You're right.
And that's the issue, I think, at least for me anyway, with some of the pop stuff, is that the lyrics don't shine through as much. Because even when somebody covers Taylor and they like strip it down and you hear more of the lyrics, then people will get behind it. But they don't like it as much when there's all the production, especially like with the Antonoff produced stuff, where it's kind of in a way a little over the top. And I'm not sure if I just like the way that Antonoff mixes everything entirely, to be really honest. I know he also did the last 1975 record, which some people liked.
He's fine. I think his sound has just been overdone, overplayed. I think he's a bit of a one-trick pony stylistically, which, sorry to say that. I'm not saying I disliked him. I just felt like we're not out of the Bleachers era. Even if he's tried to push boundaries, I just feel like he's not that diversified of a producer when you compare him to other people. And so I found his sound kind of plays it out quickly.
Yeah, it's that like kind of 80s synth like revivalist thing. But then there's also like a bit of like a Springsteen influence too, I think, with some of his stuff.
Yeah.
I think actually Springsteen even was on the Bleachers album, which is pretty
that's pretty crazy. Cool.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I almost wonder if Antonoff and Brandon Flowers should get together and do something.
Okay. I'm not going to lie. That would be good. Again, I'm not really big on that sound as much anymore. And I find it still a bit, okay, not a bit. I think it's very old and done. I think it's my ADHD. I feel like after a while, like I feel like I can't stand this stuff as long as other people can. So Forgive me for being very picky.
Yeah.
But I do think that if Antonoff and Brandon Flowers work together, I would listen to that. And I think it would probably be very convincing. That's a good point.
No, I think so too. I mean, it's just with both of them having a big you know, their influences seem to be very similar, like Springsteen, the Cars, you know, a lot of that like very synth heavy 80s music. And I think Brandon Flowers would do really well with a solo album with Antonoff. And actually,
it would breathe life into Brandon's sound, because when Brandon would do other stuff, like, you know, he's an 80s boy and I get it. But after a while, his sound got stale and kind of boring.
Yeah.
I think Antonoff could breathe new life into that.
Yeah. Are you talking about Brandon with the Killers, or are you talking about his solo record?
Post Killers, as well as kind of the later Killer stuff.
Okay.
I think that Antonoff could breathe life and maybe bring new perspective and freshness into what Brandon has already been doing. It would complement it very well. That's my theory.
Right, because I think, like, if you have Antonoff as the main producer, you could almost have like a Desired Effect 2.0.
Yeah.
Where basically it would be very similar to that record, except I feel like it would be even more like commercially viable. Because when that Desired Effect album came out, I actually thought it was pretty good for the most part.
It was fine, you know?
It was fine. All right. It was better than a lot of people were giving it credit for.
Yes, I do agree with that.
A lot of people just kind of disregarded it. Even a lot of Killers fans were kind of like, eh, I don't know about that.
I loved Can't Deny My Love.
Yeah, that's a great single. That's an amazing
single. It was so catchy.
That's an amazing single, yeah.
I think Antonoff could bring more tracks like that out of Brandon.
Oh, for sure. It would be a huge commercial hit.
I agree.
No doubt about it. I mean, just as long as the songwriting is like on point,
mm-hmm.
and as long as the production is relatively well mixed, I think it would be a solid hit, especially amongst like that crowd. And actually, I think to a certain extent, I think there's a fair amount of Swifties that would probably also enjoy that album.
So you touched on her lyrics, and I actually agree with you on that. I remember back in like 2014, 2015,
yeah,
when Taylor was more in her pop bag. Well, she kind of is, but she's also kind of gotten back into the more acoustic indie folk type sound. I don't think her lyrics, I think, were just much better in the country space. And I remember during the 2014, 2015, early mid 2010s time, people were just like, her lyrics became somewhat of a meme. Like, you remember that very well. It was just, I don't know. I just felt like it felt like an awkward fit, you know, and she got big and that's fine. I just felt like it didn't suit her as well as her country or when she does stuff like, you know, the national type stuff or Bon Iver or whatever, you know, like I just feel like she does much better with the singer-songwriter sound versus the, you know, the even toward Beyonce or I don't want to say Adele, but you get what I'm saying. You know, like, I just don't think that she does. I don't know. It doesn't convince me is my point.
Yeah. No, I feel that. Yeah, I definitely feel that. So, no, it's just very interesting that, you know, now you have Beyonce both topping Billboard's chart and the country charts as well. So, and yeah, I mean, like, all those are really solid points. And, you know,
she doesn't do pop as well as Beyonce. She doesn't have to necessarily, but my point is that she doesn't for as big as she's gotten. She got lucky, or I don't know what it was. She just, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, to a certain extent, I mean, Beyonce always had that kind of like, although Beyonce was a pop artist, you know, you have to think about the fact that they came up in a way, they have a similar come up in the sense that they've been doing music since they were like teens, and they've been like actively on the charts since they were teens. But the difference was that Beyonce was part of Destiny's Child at the start, which of course was the big R&B female group of the day, you know, right along
Spice Girls, all that stuff. Yeah, that was the thing. Yeah,
I mean right up there, I think, with like TLC.
Oh, totally. Yeah,
it was like TLC and like Destiny's Child as far as R&B girl groups.
You know, historically, I've always gravitated towards Swift, though, to be honest, more than Beyonce. I wasn't really that big on Beyonce. I actually kind of like her in her country bag, surprisingly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Beyonce has really gotten actually a lot, even on the R&B and pop side of things. She got much more into that, I think, in like the later 2000s and the 2010s.
True.
I mean, I know there's a lot of people who love that debut album from Beyonce, the one that has like Crazy in Love on it and all that stuff.
That one's fine. That one's fine.
You know, people herald that as like a classic album, but and it is.
It is.
You know, because a lot of that is big, but I don't think that she really got in the mastery of kind of the pop R&B bag until the Sasha Fierce album. That was the big one with Halo, Single Ladies, you know, that was a huge era. And oddly enough, you know, that the whole Kanye incident with Beyonce plays into this also. Once again, it's like no matter what we talk about, it seems to circle back to Ye in some way.
Why does this keep happening? He's everywhere.
He's been around long enough and he's had enough of an impact in the industry and in various careers that it's like no matter who you talk about, it seems like there's always some sort of tie-in back to Ye.
He's like a Rickroll to me, you know, like you never know when he's going to show up.
But, I mean, he does. You remember the VMAs, though? That was the whole drama was.
Oh, I'm going to let you finish.
Yeah, it was Taylor, Bay, and Ye. That's what it was. It was the three of them. So, and that was like the Single Ladies thing. You know, that was the whole dispute was that Single Ladies is, you know, one of the best videos of all time. You know,
this is before the infamous Will slap. It's crazy how like that was the thing at the time.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, it was like, you know, this was, you know, I mean, the internet was around, but like people were still very much tuned into TV at the time. And I think that particular VMAs had like tens of millions of viewers.
That was like a pioneer moment, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like it was definitely like a cultural moment for sure. But then back to Beyonce, though, like even after the Sasha Fierce, you know, like the surprise album, the self-titled, and Lemonade too.
Lemonade had its acclaim for sure.
Yeah, well, the one before it too, the self-titled actually had some acclaim also. Both are held as like kind of standards for like
pop,
R&B, and pop. And I think even Lemonade had a little more of like a hip hop influence too, if I recall.
I think it did.
With a lot of the lyrics.
It was a bit of a sleeper hit because it wasn't heralded that greatly, but when people listened to it, like for the most part, I think that was a Beyonce album for non-Beyonce people.
Yeah, definitely. So no, I think that we're on a similar page there regarding this whole thing. Like I said, I think in the previous episode, I'll be very curious to see if this is a sound that Beyonce is going to continue to run with for the next album, or if it's just going to be like something that she kind of dabbled in and like that's kind of where it's going to stop. Because Renaissance Part 2 is coming out, I believe, in a very short period of time. So that's really the curiosity, is just going to be whether or not it's more, I mean, people are saying already, people are very sure that it's going to be more of a country thing like the single is, but who knows until it actually drops if it's going to be really more of that whole thing. But it'll be interesting to see, just to kind of see where it goes.
Yes, it will.
And then just a really quick touch on the whole UMG thing. UMG has decided to basically just lay off a bunch of people, which I find oddly coincidental considering this whole TikTok drama that you're going to pull all of the music from TikTok and then you're going to do that right before the Grammys. And then not too long afterwards, you're going to say, oh, we're going to restructure everything. And then that's going to involve us just laying off like a big chunk of our employees. It just seems a little bizarre in the timing of things.
Just a little bit.
But once again, as another update, they still seem to be sticking to their guns in regards to keeping the music off of those services. I mean, for a second, I thought that there was a potential that it was kind of a bluff, or maybe like, you know, it was going to be something they were going to like threaten to do, but they weren't actually going to do it.
Follow with it. Yeah.
And even if they did do it, I thought that there was at least somewhat of a solid chance that they would revert back on it after they found, you know, that their numbers are going down and you know, whatnot.
But they won't back down.
Yes. Yeah. Just, I mean, Tom Petty is in the grave, and he, you know, and Jeff Lynne doesn't have to, hopefully Jeff Lynne doesn't sue us for that. like he did Sam Smith.
But I actually forgot that Petty was gone. So that was very petty of me.
Oh, wow. But yeah, no, how could you, I mean, to a certain extent, Tom Petty had a bit of a revival too with his song being in the GTA 6 trailer.
It did. Yeah, it did. Which track?
Yeah, Love is a Long Road Long, Long Road is the song that was in the GTA 6 trailer. And I believe his streaming numbers for the song went up by like 200% or something after that that trailer dropped.
Bro, this is part of that country wave.
Yeah, although I think with Petty, that's more of like an...
And in Florida and Texas are going to be in the headlines more. It's just...
Well, Florida's already been in headlines for different reasons. But yes, I know what you mean. But Florida's already been there.
Pardon me. I guess I meant more the redneck and like the twang and the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. So definitely. But just an interesting aside with Petty and getting some new life, I guess, into his music, and a new generation potentially is going to get into his stuff through that GTA trailer, which, I mean, Rockstar and the GTA games have always had they've always had an emphasis on music in even their GTA games, which I think has made them so successful.
Mm-hmm.
Although you're still going to have to wait, I think, a couple years.
I'm actually waiting for Red Dead, the third. We'll see. That'll probably come out in 20 years, but hey.
Yeah, I mean, considering you have to wait how long for GTA 6, yeah.
By then, we'll have like four-dimensional horses like flying. I don't know, something like that.
Well, then one more quick thing. Adobe is releasing a prototype tool for creating and editing audio. So I guess they have like Adobe Audition, which is kind of an audio editor. But now they're going to try to... Are they basically making a DAW is what it looks like? Let's see. Adobe's latest generative AI experiment. Yes. Helps people to create and customize music without any professional audio experience.
Oh, my goodness. And I think I heard this on a down low, but now that you're kind of making it more clear for me.
Yeah.
What the heck?
Right. I mean, the AI... I mean, AI is going to be big. It's here to stay, and it's going to creep into music, whether we really like it or not. It's going to
actually let me clarify that, because you're right. It is going to creep in. Okay, I'm fine with this technology. Now that I think about it, I'm actually fine, and I'm not thinking like, you know, the guy like, oh, it's going to take our jobs. Like, it is here. It's going to do what it's going to do. That's fine, right?
Right.
But I think what's bothering me more about that is not so much the fact like, because like, I'll find a way to do things, you know. I don't mind if people want to use their little software. I always think, and I could be wrong, but I think for the most part, people will always be relevant. And I don't think that people are totally going to be eclipsed by AI. But I do think it's going to... I'm all for democratizing things. And so if this helps people who can't afford someone to do work for them, or who maybe plays four instruments and needs AI to do two more instruments that they don't play, I'm fine with that, is my point. But I do find what I think is going to bother me more about this is the lazy effect and the fact that people are not going to apply effort. I think it's more the death of creativity that really bothers me more so than the supposed taking away one's job or career.
Sure. But I do think that if Adobe is really going to try to enter like the DAW space, I think that that's an interesting topic of conversation for the next episode, and just in terms of more of the production sides of audio workstations. So we should probably touch on that more next time around.
I agree. Instead of doing it all now.
But this has been the Work Tape Podcast. It's your boy, Money Mitchell, Isaac Rubin Grover. Stay hydrated and stay safe and be good to one another out there, especially in these turbulent times. And stay tuned for more content. Peace.
Don't let the impending nuclear war bring you down. Peace.